her scarcely as a woman, but as a being, changeful, shining, eager, sometimes a little cold even, and often suddenly silent. Yet not silent out of emptiness, only silent while her mind took hold of something that he said, and pulled it delicately apart to question what it was. In such silence she often did forget herself, and forgot that her eyes were still on Yuen's eyes, though he had finished speaking, so that in such silence more than once he found himself looking deep and deeper into the soft, changing, darkening blackness of her eyes. Not once did she speak of mysteries, nor did the elder too again either, until at last when Yuen rose to take his leave, the old man, clinging to his hand a little, said, "If you wish, son, come to church with us next Sunday, and see how you like it." And Yuen, taking this as further kindness, said he would, and this he said more willingly because he felt it would be a very pleasant thing to see these three again, who made him like a son in the house, who was not even of their race or kind. Now after Yuen had gone back to his room, when he lay in his bed waiting for sleep, he thought about these three, and most of all he thought about the daughter of the old two. Here was a woman such as he had not seen. She was of a material different from any he had known, a stuff more shining than Eilon, and this in spite of all of Eilon's mirth and pretty kitten's eyes and little laughters. This white woman, though grave often, had some strong inner light, at times too hard, if one compared her to the vague, soft kindness of her mother, but always clear. She made no misdirected movement even of her body. There were in her none of the constant, useless movements of the body only, such as the landlady's daughter made continually to show her thigh or wrist or foot more clearly forth, blind movements of the flesh. Nor were her words, nor was her voice like that one's, who had set Sheng's pretty words to heavy, passionate music. For this Mary's words were not surcharged with over-subtle meaning. No, she spoke them out swiftly and with sharp clearness, and each word had its own weight and meaning and no more. Good tools of her mind, but not messengers of vague suggestion. When Yuen thought of her, he remembered most her spirit, clothed in color and in substance of her flesh, but not hidden by it. And he fell to thinking of what she said and how she said sometimes things he had not thought upon. Once, she said, when they spoke of love of country, "Idealism and enthusiasm are not the same thing. Enthusiasm may be only physical, the youth and strength of body making the spirit gay. But idealism may live on, though the body be aged or broken, for it is the essential quality of the soul which has it." And then her face had changed in its quick, lightning way, and looking at her father very tenderly, she said, "My father has real idealism, I think." And the old man answered quietly, "I call it faith, my child." To which Yuen now remembered she had answered nothing. And so, thinking of these three, he fell asleep in more content of soul than he had ever had in this foreign country, for to him they seemed actual and to be comprehended. When the day came, therefore, for the religious rites of which the old teacher had spoken, Yuen dressed himself with care in his better garments, and again he went to the house. At first he felt some timidity, because the door opened and there Mary stood. It was plain she was surprised to see him, for her eyes darkened and she did not smile. She was, moreover, clothed in a long blue coat and a small hat of the same hue, and she seemed taller than Yuen remembered her, and somehow touched with an austerity. Therefore he stammered forth,
Your father invited me to go with him to his religious place today.
She answered gravely, searching out his eyes with some troubled look within her own, "I know he did. Will you come in? We are almost ready." So Yuen went in again to the room where he had remembered such good friendship. But this morning it did not seem so friendly to him. There was no fire burning on the hearth as there had been that night, and the hard, cold sunshine of the autumn morning fell through the windows and showed the wornness of the rugs upon the floor and of the stuffs upon the chairs, so that whereas by night and firelight and lamplight what had looked dark and homely and used by this stern sunshine seemed too worn and aged and needing newness. Yet the old man and his lady were very kind when they came in, clothed decently for their devotions, as kind as they had been. The old man said,
"I am so glad you came. I did not speak again because I do not want to influence you unduly."
But the lady said in her soft, overflowing way,
"But I have prayed. I prayed you would be led to come. I pray about you every night, Mr. Wang. If God will grant my prayer, how proud it will make me, if through us—"
Then, sharp as a ray of the piercing sunlight across the old room, the daughter's voice fell, a pleasant voice, not unkind, but very clear and perfect in its tone, a little colder yet than Yuan had heard it.
"Shall we go now? We have just time to get there."
She led them out and sat herself by the guiding wheel in the car which was to take them to the place they went. The old two sat behind, but Yuan she placed beside her. Yet she did not say any word while she turned the wheel this way and that. And Yuan, being courteous, did not speak either, nor did he even look at her, except as he might turn his head to see a strange sight passed. Yet without looking straightly at her, he saw her face sideways against and in front of that which he looked. There was no smile or light in that face now. It was grave even to a sort of sadness, the straight nose not small, the sharply cut, delicately folded lips, the clearly rounded chin lifted out of a dark fur upon her collar, her gray eyes set direct and far upon the road ahead. As she was now, turning the wheel quickly and well, sitting there straight and silent, Yuan was even a little afraid of her. She seemed not that one with whom he had once spoken freely and easily. Thus they came to a great house into which many men and women and even children were passing. With these they entered and seated themselves, Yuan between the old man and the young woman. Yuan could not but look about him curiously, for this was only the second time he had been in such a temple. Temples in his own land he had seen often, but they were for the common and the unlearned, and for women, and he had never worshipped any god in his life. A few times he had entered for curiosity and stared at the vast images, and had listened to the deep warning solitary note the great bell gave forth when it was struck, and he had seen with contempt the gray-robed priests, for his tutor taught him early that such priests were evil and ignorant men who preyed upon the people. So Yuan had never worshipped any god. Now in this foreign temple he sat and watched. It was a cheerful place, and through long narrow windows the early autumn sunshine streamed in great bars of light, falling upon flowers at an altar, upon the gay garments of women, upon many faces of varied meaning, although not of many young. Soon music flowed out into the air from some unknown source, at first very soft music, then gradually growing in sound and volume, until all the air was throbbing with that music. Yuan, turning his head to see what its source was, saw beside him the figure of the old man, his head bowed before him, his eyes closed, upon his face a smile, sweet, ecstatic. And Yuan, looking about, observed others also in this bound, speechless silence, and in courtesy he wondered what he should do. But when he looked at Mary, he saw her sitting as she had been at the wheel, straight and proud, her chin lifted, and her eyes opened and fixed in the distance. When he saw her sitting thus, Yuan also therefore did not bow his head in any unknown worship. Now, remembering what the old man had said, that in the power of their religion these people had found their strength, Yuan watched to know what this power was, but he could not easily discover it. For when the grave music fell soft once more and at last withdrew itself into the place where it hid, a robed priest came out and read certain words to which all seemed to listen decorously, although Yuan, observing, could see that some paid heed to their garments or to others' faces or to some such thing. But the old man and his lady listened carefully, although Mary, her face still set as to a far distance, did not change her look with anything she heard, so that Yuan could not know if indeed she listened. Again and again there was music, and there was chanting of words Yuan could not understand, and the robed priest exhorted those in the temple out of the great book from which he had read. To this Yuan listened, and it seemed a good harmless exhortation by a pleasant holy man, who urged his countrymen to be more kindly to the poor, and to deny themselves and to obey their God, and such talk he made as priests do anywhere. When he had finished, he bade them bow while he cried out a prayer to his God. Again Yuan looked to see what he should do, and again he saw the old pair bow themselves in their devotion. And again the woman by him held her proud head high, and therefore he also did not bow. He held his eyes open and looked to see if any image would be brought forth by the priest, since the people were bowed ready to worship. But the priest brought forth no image, and no god was seen anywhere. And after a time, when he had finished his speaking, the people waited no more for the god to come, but stirred and rose and went to their homes. And Yuan went back also to his own place, not understanding anything of what he had seen or heard, and out of all of it remembering most the clear line of that proud woman's head, which had not bowed itself. Chapter 17. Yet out of this day grew the next new thing in Yuan's life. For one day when he returned to his room from the field where he was now planting seeds of winter wheat, to see which did best in various rows where he placed them, he found a letter upon his table. Letters were very rare in Yuan's solitary life in this foreign country. Once in 3 months he knew his father's letter would lie on that table. Each time its letters brushed to say the same words nearly, that the tiger did well, but rested until next spring when he would go out to war again, that Yuan must study hard at what he wished most to know, and that he must come home as soon as his years of study were complete, since he was only son. Or else a letter might lie there from the lady, Ailan's mother, a quiet, good letter, telling small things that she did, how Ailan she thought was to be wed, now 3 times promised, by her own will, but each time willfully refusing to be wed to the one promised, so that Yuan smiled a little when he read of Ailan's willfulness. And when the mother had spoken of it, she often added as though for her own comfort, "But Mei Ling is my stay. I have taken her into the home with us, and she learned so well and does everything so rightly, and is so filled with every proper sense of fitness, that almost she might be the child I should have had, and sometimes more my daughter than my Ailan is." Such letters Yuan could look for, and once or twice Ailan had written, letters mixed in 2 languages and full of willfulness and teasing and pretty threats if Yuan did not bring her back some Western baubles, and vows that she expected perhaps a Western sister-in-law. Or Sheng might write, but very seldom and never surely, and Yuan knew, half-sadly, that his life was filled with all the many things a young man has who is beautiful in body and skilled in pretty speech, whose foreignness added grace to him in the eyes of those city-dwellers who sought restlessly and everywhere for every new thing they could find. But this letter was none of these. It lay white and square upon the table, and his name was there marked clearly in black ink. So Yuan opened it, and it was from Mary Wilson. There her name was, plain and large at the bottom, yet with an energy and a keenness in its shape, and very far from the rude letters that the landlady shaped upon her monthly bills. The letter asked Yuan to come for a special purpose on any day he could, since she who wrote it had been troubled since the day they went to church together, and had something unsaid which she wanted said, so she could be free of it toward Yuan. Then Yuan, wondering very much, dressed himself in his dark, better clothes and washed himself free of the stain of earth, and that night, when he had eaten, he went out. And as he went, his landlady cried out after him that she had put a letter from a lady on his table that day, and now she reckoned that he went to see her. And all the company laughed aloud, and the young girl laughed loudest of them all. But Yuan said nothing. He was only angry that this rude laughter should come even as near as this to Mary Wilson, who was too high for such as these to touch her name. And Yuan felt his heart grow hot against them, and he swore to himself that none should ever hear her name from him, and he wished he had not that laughter and these looks even in his mind when he went to her. But there the memory was, and it put a constraint upon him when he stood again before that door, so that when the door opened and she stood there, He was cool and shy, and did not touch her hand when she put it warmly forth, but feigned he did not see it. He was so fastidious against the coarseness of those others. And she felt his coolness. A light went from her face, and she put away the little smile she had to greet him, and asked him gravely to come in, and her voice was quiet and cool. But when he went in, the room was as it had been that first evening, warm and intimate and lit with the flames that burned upon the hearth. The old deep chairs invited him, and the very stillness and the emptiness received him. Nevertheless, Yuen waited to see where she would seat herself, so that he might not be more near her than he ought to be, and she, not looking at him, dropped with a careless grace upon a low stool before the fire, and motioned to a great chair near. But Yuen, as he sat in it, contrived to push it back somewhat, so that while he was near to her, near enough so that he could see her face clearly, yet if he put forth a hand, or if she did, their hands could not touch each other. So he wished to have it, and know more surely that the laughter of those common folk was coarse laughter only. Thus these two sat alone. Of the old pair there was nothing seen or heard. But without telling of them, the woman began to speak directly and with abruptness, as if what she said was hard to say, and yet necessary to be spoken. "Mr. Wong, you will think it strange of me that I ask you to come here tonight. We are really strangers, almost. And yet I have read so much about your country. You know I work in the library, and I know a little of your people and admire them a great deal. I asked you here, not only for your own sake, but for your sake as a Chinese, and I speak to you as a modern American to a modern Chinese." Here she paused, and gazed a while into the fire, and at last took up a little twig caught among a heap of logs upon the hearth, and with this she stirred half idly the red coals which lay beneath the burning logs. And Yuen waited, wondering what was to be said, and not wholly easy with her, since he was not used to being alone with a woman, until she went on. "The truth is, I have been much embarrassed by my parents' efforts to interest you in their religion. Of them I say nothing, except they are the best people I have ever known. You know my father. You see, anyone can see what he is. People talk of saints. He is one. I have never seen him angry or unkind in all my life. No girl, no woman ever had better parents. The only trouble is that my father, if he did not give me his goodness, did give me his brain. In my time I have used that brain, and it has turned against the religion, the energy that feeds my father's life, really, so that I myself have no belief in it. I cannot understand how men like my father, with strong, keen intellect, do not use it upon their religion. His religion satisfies his emotional needs. His intellectual life is outside religion, and there is no passage between the two. My mother, of course, is not an intellectual. She is simpler, easier to understand. If father were like her, I should be merely amused when they try to make a Christian out of you. I should know they never could." Now the woman turned her honest eyes straight upon Yuen, and let her hands grow still, the twig hanging in her fingers. And looking at him, she grew still more earnest. "But I am afraid. Father may influence you. I know you admire him. You are his pupil. You study the books he has written. He has been attracted to you as he seldom has been to any pupil. I think he has a sort of vision of you going back to your country as a great Christian leader. Has he told you he once wanted to be a missionary? He belongs to the generation when every good, earnest boy or girl was faced with the missionary call, as it was named. But he was engaged to my mother, and she wasn't strong enough to go. I think both of them have felt ever since a sense of some frustration. Strange how generations differ. We feel the same thing about you, they and I." There were her deep, lovely eyes, looking straight into his, unashamed, with no coquetry. "And yet how we differ. They feel, because you are what you are, how glorious to win you to their cause. To me, how presumptuous to think you could be made more than you are by a religion. You are of your own race and your own time. How can anyone dare to impose upon you what is foreign to you?" These words she said with a sort of ardor streaming from her, and Yuen was stirred, but not grossly, towards her. for she seemed to see him not only as himself, one man, but as one of his whole race. It was as though through him she spoke to millions. Between them was a wall of delicacy, of mind, of a withdrawal native to them both. And he said gratefully,
"I understand very well what you mean. It doesn't, I promise you, weaken any admiration I feel for your father, to know he believes a thing my mind cannot accept."
Her eyes were turned upon the flames again. The fire had sunk into coals and ashes, and the glow was steadier now upon her face and hair, upon her hands, upon the dark red of her dress. She said thoughtfully, "Who could not admire him? It was a hard thing for me, I can tell you, to put aside my childish faith in what he had taught me. But I was honest with him, I could be, and we talked again and again. I couldn't talk to Mother at all, she always began to weep, and that made me impatient. But Father met me at every point, and we could talk. He always respected my disbelief, and I always respected more and more his faith. We would reason very much alike up to a certain point, when the intellect must stop and one must begin to believe without understanding. There we parted. He could take that at a leap, frankly believing in faith and hope. I couldn't. My generation can't." Suddenly and with energy she rose, and taking a log, flung it upon the bed of coals. A mass of sparks flew up the wide black chimney, and again a blaze burst forth. And again Yuen saw her shining in the fresh light. She turned to him, standing above him, leaning against the mantel, saying seriously, yet with a little half-smile at the corners of her mouth, "I think that's what I wanted to say. That sums it up. Don't forget that I do not believe. When my parents try to influence you, remember their generation. It is not mine, not yours, and mine." Yuen rose too, very grateful, and as he stood beside her, thinking what to say, words came up unexpectedly out of him, which were not what he would have planned to say.
"I wish," he said slowly, looking at her, "that I could speak to you in my own language, for I find your speech never wholly natural to me. You have made me forget we are not one race. Somehow, for the first time since I entered your country, I have felt a mind speaking to my mind without a barrier."
This he said honestly and simply, and she looked back at him as straight as a child, their eyes level to each other's, and she answered quietly but very warmly, "I believe we shall be friends, Yuen?" And Yuen answered, half timidly and as though he put his foot out to step upon an unknown shore, not knowing where he stepped or what was there, but still he must step forth,
"If this is your wish."
And then still looking at her, he added, his voice very low with shyness,
"Mary."
She smiled then, a quick, brilliant, playful smile, accepting what he said, and then stopping him as clearly as though she spoke the words, "We have said enough for this day." They spoke then for a while of small things in books or elsewhere, until there were steps heard upon the porch, and she said at once, "Here they come, my precious two. They went to prayer meeting. They go every Wednesday night." And she walked swiftly to the door and opened it, and welcomed the old two, who came in, their faces fresh and reddened by the chilly autumn air. Soon they were all before the fire, and more than ever they made Yuen one of them, and bade him sit down again, while Mary brought fruit and the hot milk they loved to drink before they slept. And Yuen, though his soul loathed the milk, yet took it and sipped a little of it to feel more one with them, until Mary perceived how it was and laughed and said, "Why didn't I remember?" And she brewed a pot of tea and gave it to him, and they made a little merriment about it. But the moment which afterwards Yuen thought of most was this. In a pause of talk, the mother sighed and said, "Mary, dear, I wish you had wanted to come tonight. It was a good meeting. I think Dr. Jones spoke so well, didn't you, Henry, about having faith enough to carry us even through the greatest trials?" And then she said kindly to Yuen, "You must feel very lonely often, Mr. Wong. I often think how hard it must be to be so far from your dear parents, and they, too, how hard it is for them to let you be so far. If you feel you'd like it, we'd love to have you take supper with us Wednesdays and go to church with us." Then Yuen, perceiving how kindly she was, said only,
"Thank you,"
And as he said it, his eyes fell on Mary, who sat again upon the stool. So now her eyes were beneath the level of his own, and very near. And there in her eyes and upon her face he saw a lovely, tender, half-merry meaning, tender towards the mother, but very comprehending, too, toward Yuen, so that this look bound them together in a sort of mutual understanding, wherein they, too, were quite alone. Thereafter Yuen lived with a sense of secret, hidden richness. No longer was this people alien to him wholly, nor its ways altogether strange, and often he forgot he hated them, and he thought he had not so many slights put on him as before either. He had now two gateways whereby to enter. The one was the outer gateway, and it was this one house into which he could come and go always with freedom and welcome. The worn brown room became home to him in this foreign place. He had thought his loneliness very sweet, and the thing he wanted most. Yet now he came to this further knowledge, and it was that loneliness is only sweet to a man if it rids him of presences irksome and unwanted, and it is no longer sweet when the beloved presences are discovered. Here, in this room, did Yuen discover such beloved presences. There were the little presences of used books, seeming so small and silent, and yet when sometimes he came alone into this room and sat alone, the house being empty for the time, he took up a book and he found himself spoken to most mightily. For here books spoke more nearly to him than they did anywhere, because the room enfolded him in learned quiet and in friendliness. And there was here often the beloved presence of his old teacher. Here, more than in any classroom or even in the fields, Yuen came to know the full beauty of this man. The old man had lived a very simple childlike life, a farmer's son, a student, then a teacher many years, and he knew so little of the world that one would say he had not lived in it. Yet did he live in two worlds of mind and spirit. And Yuen, exploring into those two worlds with many questions and long listening silences, when he sat and heard the old man speak out his knowledge and beliefs, felt no narrowness here, but the wide-ranging, simple vastness of a mind unlimited by time or space, to which all things were possible in man and God. It was the vastness of a wise child's mind, to which there are no boundaries between the true and magical. Yet this simplicity was so informed with wisdom that Yuen could not but love it, and ponder, troubled, on his own narrowness of understanding. One day, in such trouble, he said to Mary, when she came in and found him alone and troubled, "Almost your father persuades me to be a Christian." And she answered, "Does he not almost so persuade us all? But you will find as I did, the barrier is the almost. Our two minds are different, Yuen, less simple, less sure, more exploring." So she spoke, definitely and calmly, and linked thus with her Yuen felt himself pulled back from some brink towards which he had been drawn against his will, and yet somehow with his will too, because he loved the old man. But she drew him back each time. If this house was the outer gateway, the woman was the gateway to its inner heart. For through her he learned of many things. For him she told the story of her people, and how they came to the shores of the land upon which they lived, gathered out of every nation and tribe nearly upon the earth, and how by force and by guile and by every measure of war they wrested the land from those who possessed it, and took it for themselves. And Yuen listened as he had been used to listen to tales of the three kingdoms in his childhood. Then she told how her forefathers forced their way always to the farthest coasts, boldly and desperately. And while she talked, sometimes in the room by the fire, sometimes walking in woods when the leaves fell now before winter, Yuen seemed to feel in this woman, for all her outward gentleness, the inner hardness which was in her blood. Her eyes could grow brilliant and daring and cold, and her chin set beneath her straight lips, and she would kindle as she talked, very proud of the past of her race, and Yuen was half afraid of her. And here was the strangest thing, that at these times he felt in her a power that was man, almost, and in himself a lesser, leaning quality which was less than man, as though they two together might make man and woman, but interfused, and not clearly he the man and she the woman. And there was sometimes in her eyes a look so possessive towards him, as though she felt herself stronger than he, that his flesh drew back until she changed her look. So, while he often saw her beautiful, her body arrowy and light with all her energy, and while he could not but be moved by her darting mind, yet he never could feel her quite flesh to his flesh, or as a woman to be touched or loved, for there was that in her which made him a little afraid of her, and so held back growing love. He was glad of this, for he still did not wish to think of love or woman, and while he could not keep away from this woman, since there was much in her which drew him, yet he was glad he did not want to touch her. If any had asked him even now, he would have said, "It is not wise nor well for two of different flesh to wed each other. There is the outer difficulty of the two races, neither of which likes such union. But there is also the inner struggle against each other, and this pull away from each other goes as deep as blood does. There is no end to that war between two different bloods." Yet there were times, too, when he was shaken in his sureness that he was safe against her. For sometimes she seemed not wholly foreign to him, even in blood, for she could not only show him her own people, but she showed him his people, too, in such a way as he had never seen them. There was much Yuan did not know of his own kind. He had lived among them in a way, a part of his father's life, a part of the school of war and of young men filled with ardor for a cause, a part of that earthen house even, and a part too of the great new city. But between these parts there was no unity to make them into one world. When any asked him of his country or his people, he spoke out of knowledge so separated and disjointed that even while he spoke he remembered something against what he said, and at last it came about that he did not speak at all of it, except to deny such things as the tall priest had shown, for pride's sake. But through this Western woman's eyes, who had never even seen the earth upon which his people had their life, he saw his country as he wished to see it. Now, for his sake, he knew, she read everything she could about his people, all books and sayings of travelers, the stories and the tales which had been put into her language, and the poems, too, and she pored over pictures. From all this she formed within her mind a dream, an inner knowledge of what Yuan's country was, and to her it seemed a place most perfectly beautiful, where men and women lived in justice and in peace, in a society framed soundly upon the wisdom of its sages. And Yuan, listening to her, saw it so too. When she said, "It seems to me, Yuan, that in your country you have solved all our human problems. The beautiful relationship of father to son, of friend to friend, of man to man, everything is thought of and expressed simply and well. And the hatred that your people have for violence and war, how I admire that." And Yuan, listening, forgot his own childhood, and remembered only that it was true he did hate violence and war. And since he did, he felt his people did. And again he remembered the villagers, how they had besought him against any wars. And so her words seemed true to him, and only true. And sometimes when she gazed at a picture she had found and saved for him to look at with her, a picture perhaps of a slender, tall pagoda, flung up against the sky from some craggy mountaintop, or perhaps a country pool fringed about with drooping willows and white geese floating in the shadows, she caught her breath to cry softly, "Oh, Yuan, beautiful, beautiful! Why is it when I look at these pictures I seem to feel they are of a place I have lived in and know very well? There is a strange longing in me for them. I think yours must be the most lovely country in the world." Yuan, staring at the pictures, seeing them through her eyes, and himself remembering the beauty he had seen those few days upon the land, where he had seen such pools, accepted what she said most simply, and he answered honestly enough, "It is true, it is a very fair land." Then she, looking at him troubled, said on, "How crude we all must seem to you, and how crude our life! We are so new and crude." And Yuan suddenly felt that this too was true. He remembered the house in which he lived, the brawling woman there, often angry at her daughter, so that in many bickering ways she filled the house with anger, and he remembered the poor in the city. But he said only very kindly, "In this house, at least, I find the peace and courtesy to which I am accustomed." When she was in a mood like this, Yuan almost loved her. He thought proudly, "My country has this power over her, that when she thinks and dreams upon it, she grows soft and quiet, and her hardness goes away, and she is all a woman." And he wondered if it might be one day that he would love her in spite of his own wish. Sometimes he thought it so, and then he reasoned thus, "For if she lived in my country, which she has already so much made her own, she would always be like this, gentle and womanish and admiring, and leaning on me for what she needs." And Yuan at such times thought it might be sweet to have it so, and it would be sweet to teach her how to speak his tongue, sweet too to live in the home that she could make, a home like this one he had learned to love very well, its comforts and its homeliness. But as surely as he let himself be drawn thus, he would come one day to find this Mary changed again, her hardness flashing out, her dominating self the uppermost, so that she could argue and condemn and judge and drive a point home with a keen word or two, even to her father, for she was gentler with Yuan than with anyone. And then he was afraid of her again, and he felt a wildness in her that he could not subdue. So did she draw him to her, and so thrust him from her many times. Thus, through the fifth and the sixth year, did Yuan continue in this bondage to this woman, and always she was either more than woman to him so that he was afraid of her, or less than woman so that he did not desire her. And yet he never could wholly forget she was a woman. Nevertheless, at last it came about that with his deep, too narrow nature, she was his only friend. Chapter 18. Thus it was more sure that soon or late he must draw closer to her still, or else grow colder towards her, and he drew away, and it came about over a thing not great in itself. Now Yuan was one who never could take part in all the fooleries of his fellows. There came to the school that last year two brothers who were of his own race, but from the southern parts, where men are light in speech and heart, and variable in mind and laugh too easily. These were two youths, so debonair, who so easily lent themselves to the lesser life about them, that they were well beloved, and often sought for such occasions as demanded what they could do. And they had learned to sing as well as any clown the roaring songs or tricky, halting rhythms which the students loved, so that when they came before a crowd they grinned and danced like clowns and loved the clapping hands of any crowd. Between them and Yuan there was a chasm deeper than between him and the white man. And not only was it that their native language was not his, since south and north have not the same tongue, but because Yuan was secretly ashamed of them. Let these white men, he thought, shake their bodies hither and thither in foolishness, but not his countrymen before these foreigners. And when Yuan heard the loud laughter and the roars of praise, his own face grew still and cold, because he discerned, or was sure he did, a mockery beneath the merriment. One day especially he could not bear it. There had been an evening set for amusement in a certain hall, and thither Yuan went, inviting with him Mary Wilson, for she now would often go with him to public places, and there they sat with all the others. These two Cantonese appeared in their turn that night, tricked out as an old farmer and his wife, the farmer with a long, false queue hung down his back, and the wife coarse and loud as any bawdy woman. And Yuan must sit there and see these two play the fool, in pretense quarreling and cursing over a fowl made of cloth and feathers, which they held between them and divided bit by bit. And they spoke so all could understand, and yet seemed somehow to be speaking in their own tongue too. Indeed, the sight was very funny, and the two so witty and clever that none could keep from laughing. And even Yuan smiled a little sometimes, in spite of an uneasy heart. And Mary laughed often, and when the two were gone she turned to Yuan, her face still bright with laughter. "It might have been a bit straight out of your country, Yuan,"
I am so glad to have seen it."
But these words drove the laughter from him. He said very stiffly, "It was not my country at all. No farmer there wears queues in these days. It was as much a farce as any comedian upon your own stage in New York." Seeing he was somehow very hurt, she said quickly, "Oh, of course I see that. It was only nonsense, but there was a flavor to it, nevertheless, Yuen." But Yuen would not answer. He sat gravely through the evening until it was over, and at the door he bowed, and when she asked him to come in, he would not, although of late he had looked forward eagerly to coming in and staying a while in the warm room with her. When now he refused, she looked at him questioningly, not knowing what was wrong, yet knowing something was. Suddenly she was a little impatient with him, and felt him foreign and different and difficult, and she let him go, saying only, "Another time, perhaps." Then he went away more hurt because she had not urged him, and he thought somberly, "That clownishness made her think less of me because she saw my race so foolish." He went home, and he was so angry in himself, thinking of her coolness too, that he went to the house where those two clowns slept, and knocked and went into their room and surprised them as they stood half-dressed, preparing for sleep. Upon the table were the false queue and the long false whiskers, and all the things they used for disguise. And seeing these, Yuen could not but add earnestness to what he said. He said very coldly, "I come only to say I think it wrong that you did what you did tonight. It is not true love of country so to hold one's own up for cause of laughter to a people always too ready for such laughing at us." At this, the two brothers were wholly taken aback, and first they stared at each other and at Yuen, and then one burst into laughter, and then the other. And the elder said in the foreign tongue, since they and Yuen spoke differently in any other tongue, "We let you hold up the honor of the country, elder brother. You have dignity enough for a million others." At this they roared again, and Yuen could not bear their wide lips and little merry eyes and their squat bodies. He looked at them while they laughed, and then without a word went out and shut the door behind him. "These men of the South," he muttered. "To us true Chinese they are no kin, petty tribes." Lying in his bed that night, the bare branches of the trees patterned in shadows upon the white moonlit wall. He was glad he had no dealings with them. Glad he had not even in the old days stayed on in their school of war, and he felt in this foreign country very far away from these very ones whom others counted of his race and nation. He stood alone, he thought, proudly, himself, the only one to show forth what his people really were. Thus Yuen gathered all his pride to strengthen him, for he was delicate in feeling this night, because he could not bear, knowing he valued most Mary's praise of him, to have her see his kind in any foolish light. To him it was as though she saw himself thus, and this he could not endure. He lay, therefore, very proud and solitary, more solitary because from these two even of his countrymen he felt alien, and more solitary because she had not begged him to come into her house. He thought bitterly, "She looked at me differently. She looked at me almost as though I had been myself one of those two fools." And then he resolved he would not care, and he fostered in himself every memory of her that was not dear, how she could be hard sometimes, and her voice incisive as a blade of steel, and how sometimes she was positive as a woman should not be before men. And he remembered her at the wheel of her car, driving it as though it were a beast she owned, and forced to great speed and greater, her face set as stone. All these memories he did not love, and at last he ended them by saying in his haughty heart, "I have my work to do, and I will do it well. On the day when I finish what I have to do, I swear there shall not be a name above my name in the lists. Thus is my people honored." And so he slept at last. But for all his loneliness, he could not draw again into his solitude, for this Mary would not let him. She wrote him after 3 days again, and he could not but know his heart stirred strongly in him when he saw the square letter on his table. He felt his loneliness more heavily than he had before, And so now he took up the letter quickly, eager to know what she would say. When he tore it open, he was a little cooled, because the words inside were very usual, not as though she had not seen a friend for 3 days, whom she had grown used to seeing every day. There were only 4 lines, and they said only that her mother had a certain flower in early bloom, which she wished Yuen to see, and would he come the next morning? It would by tomorrow be in full bloom. That was all. At that moment, Yuen was nearer to love for this woman than he ever had been. But her coolness pricked him, too, and he said to himself with a touch of his old, childish willfulness,
"Well, if she says I am to see her mother, why, then I will see her mother."
And in his little pique, he planned that the next day he would devote himself to the mother. And so he did, and when, as he stood by the flower with the lady, and gazed into its clear whiteness, Mary came by, drawing on her gloves, he only bowed his head a little without speech. But she would not have his coolness. No, although she did not stop, except to say some common household thing to her mother, she threw her full look on Yuen, a look so calm and free from any meaning other than her friendship, that Yuen forgot his hurt, and afterwards, though she was gone, he suddenly found the flower lovely, and he took a new interest in this old mother and in what she had to say, though until this time he thought her usually too full in her speech, too quick to words of praise and of affection which she poured out, or so it seemed to Yuen, too easily on everyone alike. But now he thought in the garden she was only herself, a simple woman, very kind, and always tender to a young thing, so that she could touch a seedling struggling through the soil as tenderly as though it were a little child, and she could almost weep if a young shoot were snapped inadvertently from a rose tree, or if one stepped by accident upon a plant. She loved to feel her 2 hands in the earth among roots and seeds. Here today Yuen could share her feelings, and after a while in this dewy garden he helped her pull the weeds and showed how to move a seedling so it need not wilt, but spread its small roots confidently to the new soil. He even promised he would find some seeds from his country, and would see if he could find a sort of cabbage, very green and white and well-flavored, and he was sure she would like it very well. And this slight thing made him feel more again part of this house. And now he wondered how he ever had thought this lady was too free of speech, or ever anything other than warm and motherly. Yet even today he had not much to say to this lady, except the little talk of flowers or vegetables she planted. For he soon knew her mind was as simple in its own way as his own country mother's mind. A kindly, narrow mind which dealt on a dish to be cooked, or a friend's gossip, or the garden at its welfare, or on a bowl of flowers upon the dining table. Her loves were love of God, and of her own, too. And in these loves she lived most faithfully, and so simply that Yuen was confounded sometimes by this simplicity. For he found that this lady, who could read well enough to take up any book and comprehend it, was as filled with strange beliefs as any villager in his own land. By her own talk with him he knew it, for she spoke of a certain festival in spring, and she said, "We call it Easter, Yuen, and on this day our dear Lord rose from the dead again and ascended into heaven." But Yuen had not the heart to smile, for well he knew that there are many tales like this among folk of every nation, and he had read them in his childish days, although he could scarcely think this lady did believe them, except he heard the awe in her kind voice, and saw the goodness in her truthful eyes, blue and placid as a child's eyes, under her white hair, and he knew she did believe. These hours in the garden finished what the quiet, full look from Mary's eyes had begun, and when she came back, Yuen had put by all his hurt, and he said nothing of it, but met her as though there had been no 3 days apart. She said, smiling, when they were alone, "Have you spent all these 2 hours with Mother in her garden? She is merciless if once she gets you there." And Yuen felt her smile free him, and he smiled back and said,
"Does she believe the tales she tells of rising from the dead? We have these stories, but they are not believed often, even by women if they are learned."
To this she answered, She does believe it, Yuan. And will you understand me when I say I would fight to keep you free from such beliefs, because for you they would be false? And at the same time, I would fight to keep my mother in those same beliefs, because for her they are true and necessary. She would be lost without them, for by them she has lived, and by them she must die. But you and I, we must have our own beliefs to live and die in. As for the lady, she grew that morning to like Yuan very well, so well indeed that often later she forgot his race and kind, and would say in mild distress if he spoke of his home, "Yuan, I declare I forget most of the time now that you are not an American boy. You fit in so well here." But to this Mary answered quickly, "He will never be quite American, mother." And once she added in a lower voice, "And I am glad of it. I like him as he is." This Yuan remembered, for when Mary spoke with some secret energy, the mother for once answered nothing, but she looked with trouble in her eyes upon her daughter, and Yuan fancied at that moment she was not quite so warm as she had been towards him. But this passed when he had been with her a time or two more in her garden, for in that early spring a sort of beetle fell upon the rose trees, and Yuan helped her zealously and forgot her little chill towards him. But even in so small a thing as killing beetles, Yuan felt a confusion in himself. He furiously hated the cruel tiny things, destroying beauty of bud and leaf with every hour they lived, and he wanted to crush them every one. And yet his fingers loathed the task of plucking them from the trees, and his flesh was squeamish afterwards, nor could he wash his hands enough. But the lady had no such feelings. She was only glad for every one she plucked away, and killed them gladly for the plague they were. So did Yuan come to friendliness with the lady, and he drew near too to his old teacher, as near as he could. But the truth was that none drew very near to this old man, who was so strange a compound of depth and simplicity, of faith and intelligence. Yuan could and did talk often with him of his books and of the thoughts there, but often even in the midst of learned talk of some scientific law, the old man's thoughts would steal away into a farther nebulous world, where Yuan could not follow him, and he would muse aloud, "Perhaps, Yuan, such laws as this are only keys to unlock a door to a closed garden, and we must throw the key recklessly away, and go forth into that garden boldly by imagination. Or call it faith, Yuan, and the garden is the garden of God, God infinite, unchangeable, in whose very being are wisdom, justice, goodness, and truth, all those ideals to which our poor human laws try to lead us." So he mused, until Yuan, listening and comprehending nothing, one day said, "Sir, leave me at the gate. I cannot throw away the key." To which the old man smiled a little sadly and answered, "You are just like Mary. You young people, you are like young birds, afraid to try your wings and fly out of the little world you know. Ah, until you cease to cling to reason only and begin to trust to dreams and imaginations, there will come forth no great scientists from among you, no great poets, no great scientists. The same age produces both." But Yuan, out of all these words, remembered most the one saying, "You are just like Mary." It was true he was like Mary. Between these two, born 10,000 miles apart, and of two bloods never mingled, there was a likeness, and it was twofold, the likeness of youth to any youth in any age, alike in their rebellions, and the other likeness, which is that between a man and a maid, in spite of time or blood. For now as the full spring drew near, and the trees grew green again, and in the woods near the house little flowers sprang out from under the dead winter leaves, Yuan felt in himself a new freedom of the blood. Here, surely, in this home, there was nothing to make his flesh shrink back. Here, he forgot he was an alien. He could look at these three and forget their difference, so that the blue eyes of the old pair were natural to him, and Mary's eyes were lovely for their changefulness and no longer strange. And she grew more lovely to him. Some mildness came upon her always now. She was never sharp. her voice even not incisive as it used to be. Her face grew a little fuller, her cheeks less pale, and her lips were softer and not so tightly pressed together, and she moved more languidly and with some ease she had not before. Sometimes on Yuan's coming she seemed very busy, and she came and went so that he seldom saw her. But as spring came full in this, she changed, and, not knowing that they did it, each began to plan to meet every morning in the garden. There she came to him, fresh as the day was, her dark hair smooth about her ears. To Yuan she was most lovely when she was dressed in blue. So one day he said, smiling at her, "It is the blue the country people wear in my land. It suits you." And she smiled back and answered, "I am glad." One day Yuan remembered, for he came early to take his morning meal with them, and while he waited in the garden for her, he bent over a bed of small pansy seedlings to take the weeds carefully from their roots. Then she came and stood there watching him, her face strangely warm and lighted, and as he looked, she put forth her hand and took from his hair a leaf or bit of weed lodged there, and he felt her quick hand touch his cheek as it dropped. He knew she did not touch him purposely, for she was always careful against such touching, so that she seemed to draw away even from an aid given her at some roughness in the road. She did not, as many maids will do, put forth a hand to touch a man for any small cause. It was, in truth, the first time he had ever felt her hand, except in the cool, casual touch of greeting. But now she did not excuse herself. By her frank eyes and by the sudden faint red in her cheeks, he knew she felt the touch, and that she knew he did. They looked at each other quickly, and turned away again, and she said tranquilly, "Shall we go in for breakfast?" And he answered as tranquilly, "I must just wash my hands." So the moment passed. Afterwards he thought a little of it, and his mind flew to bring him the memory of that other touch so long ago, given by the maid now dead. Strangely, beside that ardent open touch, this new light touch seemed less than nothing, and still the other burned more real. He muttered to himself, "Doubtless